Views and opinions expressed on this show are solely those of the hosts and guests and do not express the views or opinions of any of their employers or affiliates.
Hi, I'm Ritika Rose. Welcome to Awaken Your Truth, where I bring conscious dialogues and stories that will help you free your mind, heal your life, and embody your power. I hope to shift your perspective and create deeper understanding of yourself and others. Everyone has a story. Everyone has a purpose. Every experience has a reason. This show is about engaging with the truth of who you are, discovering your personal power and stepping into your authentic self so you can have more compassion and empathy for yourself and everyone around you. It's time for us to dig deep and learn to see ourselves and others with clarity so that we can come together and create a brighter future for humanity. When we free our minds, we can heal our lives. And this is how we build a powerful, transformed world. Awaken Your Truth starts now. Good morning, everybody, and welcome back to Awaken Your Truth with me, Ritika Rose, where I bring conscious dialogues that free your mind, heal your life, and embody your power. As you know from last episode, it's June and it's Pride Awareness Month. So my shows have been focusing on Pride Awareness and bringing in my colleagues who specialize in the LGBTQIA communities. And today I'm so excited to have another colleague of mine, Taylor Mefford, on the show, a mental health counselor, who I'll be introducing very soon. And so welcome to our show, Facilitating a Supportive Connection in the LGBTQ Community for Pride Awareness Month. Taylor, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being on with me today.
Happy to be here.
Yeah, I'm excited about this talk today where audience, Taylor is going to bring his passion to supporting the LGBTQ community through the coming out and grief process of authenticating one's identity. So please, you know, I hope that you listen into the full show as we discuss how to build more cohesive understanding compassionate relationships within the LGBTQ community and the broader society. Taylor, I'm going to introduce you real quick before we jump into our first segment here. So everybody, this is Taylor Mefford, who prefers pronouns he, they. Taylor is a mental health counselor serving people all over the New York State. They have a background working with a variety of underserved populations, including the homeless youth, LGBTQ individuals, and cult survivors. Following work with nonprofits supporting these populations, Taylor received a master's degree in mental health counseling from Fordham University. Since completing their studies in 2020, they have worked in public and private settings. And currently they are employed with a Brooklyn-based private practice, and you'll see the website below Taylor's name there. In their day-to-day work, they provide therapy for childhood trauma, complicated bereavement, and LGBTQ identity issues, as well as educating local individuals and organizations on grief-related issues in contemporary society. In their free time, Taylor likes to cook, listen to music, and hang out with their wife and two cats. Awesome. And I love your cup. You have to meow. Yeah. Right as I say two cats. Perfect. You had me at meow. Perfect. So thank
it's
you, Taylor.
It's a passion. Aside from the therapy work, cats are my passion.
That's awesome. Well, thank you so much for being here today with us. We appreciate your time on Transformation Talk Radio. And, you know, we are... You know, as with all my guests, I have a chat with them before. And so our segments today are going to be very pertinent. And really, our today's conversation is going to be around how do we build community, or how does the LGBTQ community build community within itself, right? So building community as LGBTQ people. And Taylor, you have some talking points around this. How do we do this, right? How does the LGBTQ community build a community within itself, right? And I know that your talking points on this are curiosity, permission, and courage. Those are the three main things on how do we do this. And so I'm going to have you sort of take it away and talk on these three points, you know, being curious, giving permission and asking permission and also having the courage, right? And then we'll get into, you know, what really makes a good community. So go ahead. Let's talk a little bit about, you know, first, let's maybe talk about being curious, right? Curiosity, checking a hypothesis, and then also asking someone how they are, right? And being curious around that. So go ahead and expand on that for us.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, in my work, both as a therapist and as a community building advocate, I really believe that curiosity is a major cornerstone in that process. In order to create a sense of safety, it's kind of a reciprocal relationship that in order to have a sense of safety that you need for community, you also need curiosity. And then in order to build that curiosity, there needs to be a sense of safety. So they work hand in hand. And to me, being able to build community involves being able to have that little bit of curiosity about the other person. And there's a couple different kinds of curiosity. One kind of curiosity is more of a scientific curiosity, is one way we might be able to think about it. So that would be like testing a hypothesis. That's saying, okay, I am assuming that, okay, so the sun went down yesterday and then it came back up. So I'm assuming that now that the sun has gone down, my apologies, that it will come back up again tomorrow.
Right.
So that's one kind of curiosity, and that can work well in certain situations within, you know, building curiosity and building community, you know, being able to say, hey, like, I believe that I've been able to trust you before. I'm going to continue to test that trust. But there's also another kind of curiosity, one that is more open-ended and one that is more accepting things as they are. It's the sort of curiosity that says, I don't know what I'm going to find, but whatever I'll find on the other side of this door is going to be interesting and is going to be new and is going to be valuable. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of curiosity that I find to be especially valuable in building community, being able to say, hey, I've never met you before. I don't know what you're about, but I'm going to operate from the assumption that whoever you are, that's a good thing. And I want to know more about it. I want to learn what I can take into my own life. And I want to learn what makes you who you are.
Right.
And that's a foundational point for being able to build community.
I love that. And I apologize because I actually, before this segment, but actually it worked out perfectly because speaking of curiosity, I think what might be really good for the audience to listen in who are listening in to understand is the pronouns, right? Mm-hmm. Not everybody really, and that this is a curiosity question. This is me wanting to understand more and wanting to help the audience understand more, those that are listening in who are curious to understand more. I said at the beginning when I introduced you that Taylor prefers the pronouns he, they. Mm-hmm. Okay. Now, someone who's an ally and someone that has LGBTQIA friends, like I understand this a little bit more on a deeper level. And I actually try and educate, you know, others around this as well. But maybe those that maybe don't fully understand the pronouns yet, could you, you know, as a way of being curious, maybe explain to the audience what he, they, you know, means, she, they. There's also other mm-hmm. pronouns like ze, zer that are understanding that are coming up. Do you mind sharing that a little bit?
Yeah, absolutely. So the way that I tend to think about pronouns is that they are kind of like signposts, that they are a way of helping a person locate themselves and helping other people locate the person in terms of how they think about their gender identity. Mm-hmm. So for most people, we are fine with he, him, or she, her. Mm-hmm. And that is what is commonly accepted. That's what we see most people adopting. And so those sorts of people, we know where they're at in terms of their gender identity. Mm. It's pretty stable. And I'm making a big assumption there. We may not know really that their identity is stable, but that is the assumption that comes with a certain set of pronouns, right? Mm-hmm. So for me, you know, I use both he, him, and they, them pronouns.
Okay.
The way that I think about that is that generally I prefer they, them, but I'm not going to be upset if I hear he or him. Mm-hmm. You know, that's fine by me. It's really a personal choice for me that I want it to be clear that I'm accepting of whatever, you know. It's, I know that I look traditionally masculine, mm-hmm. and I don't want somebody to feel unsafe and shut off from their curiosity if I'm pitching both pronouns, and right. I don't want them to feel as though they're stumbling over themselves to get it right.
Right. And so for those that don't understand they, could you explain that?
Yeah. So for thousands of years, Western society has generally thought of people as being man or woman, mm-hmm. having he, him, or she, her pronouns. But in more contemporary society, we've started to question that. Do we have only those two options, or are there more? And so one common way to kind of capture that question of what else is there is allowing people to adopt they, them pronouns. Mm-hmm. Sorry, coughing
break. Okay, that's okay. We're all going through it right now.
Yep. So that's one way to adopt a third option. There are obviously other what are called neo-pronouns. Those are less common, but still are used on occasion. Some people will prefer those neo-pronouns, Z's or that kind of thing.
So to clarify, those individuals that choose to use they, their Z, Zers, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's maybe those individuals that identify with both the male and female identity, or feel neither. Like, or neither. Okay, mm-hmm. That's perfect. Okay, or neither. They just are. Mm-hmm. Okay. Awesome. Thank you for explaining that further. I appreciate that. And thank you for sharing your personal story around that. Yeah. We do have a couple minutes left before commercial break, but let's just tap into a little bit more about building community as LGBTQ community, right? So now we've talked about curiosity and we've given an example to the audience through our conversation here. So let's talk a little bit about permission and courage within the LGBTQ community, and how can we build a stronger connection there? Through permission and courage. Yeah,
absolutely. So like safety and curiosity, permission and courage are very much interlinked. That permission, by that, I mean permission for the self and for other people to rethink the rules, kind of like thinking about pronouns mm-hmm. in a different way. Okay, great. We have he, him, she, her. How else can we think about gender? How else can we think about pronouns in ways that we reference ourselves and other people? And let's give ourselves and other people the permission to explore a new set of rules. Courage is the flip side of that, being able to, once we've been given the permission, to take the courage to go on that journey, to say, hey, I'm going to reach out and I'm going to connect with you in a new kind of way, in a way that we haven't been allowed to do before. One thing that I've been spending a lot of time thinking about is that, you know, even just 50 years ago, we were treating the LGBT community with a lot of hatred. There was a lot of violence and a lot of rejection going on. I was just listening to a story by somebody who was fired from their job and was beaten with an inch of his life for being gay. And that kind of thing is, you know, not totally erased today. Unfortunately, violence still exists, but we're allowing ourselves to have the permission and courage to think about new ways to interact with people, to think about more accepting ways, to think about how we can be inclusive of people of a variety of backgrounds, not even just gender and sexuality, but different cultural backgrounds, different religious backgrounds, mm-hmm. thinking about how can we take your life experience and allow it to have some overlap with my life experience.
I kind of feel like it's both ways, right? With permission and courage. I think for those, most people in society, right, have been taught a certain way of thinking, or life should be a certain way. People should be a certain way, right? So it's, I think permission goes two ways. It's giving ourselves permission. If we've been taught a certain way that life should be, or people should be a certain way, giving ourselves personal permission to open ourselves up to that broader view, right, of looking at people a different way, right, and understanding people in a different way. But then also those that are going through the identity shifts or questioning or what have you, is giving themselves permission to also show up as they feel like they need to show up, right?
Yep.
Right. Absolutely. And then courage also going both ways, right? Those that are now giving themselves permission to look at the world and look at people and look at society a different way, you've given yourself permission, now have the courage to do so, right? Without feeling like you're going to get a backlash if you're going to start being accepting of something new, right? And then also those that are questioning identity, now that you've given yourself permission, have the courage to just show up and be. Yes. Right? Like, that's what I'm hearing you say. So just wanted to sort of reiterate that back and see if you validate that. Absolutely. And awesome. So yeah, I think we do need to go into commercial break right now. So thank you so much for that part of the conversation. Thank you, audience, for listening. When we come back, we're going to talk about, you know, what makes for a good community, right? And that was part of the segment that we didn't get to yet. What makes for a good community? And also, Taylor has a really, interesting talking point, or important talking point, about being closeted during Pride Month, right? And how do we support those that are still closeted during Pride Month? And how does that make for a better community? So thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll be right back. Tagged You're It takes you on a journey of 8 life mastery skills that will help you step into your power and become the leader of your own life. Inspiring, real, insightful, and therapeutic, the pages help you discover deeper awareness, understanding, and relationship with yourself and others. Give yourself permission to live life through your authentic self. These steps can be used in your personal, professional, and social life. Order your copy now on Amazon.
Are you trying to figure out the best way to learn about your life purpose and how to access your soul gifts? Let Adrienne Cobb introduce you to the power behind her Wild Magic membership. Adrienne's Wild Magic membership is a one-of-a-kind, ongoing monthly program designed to connect you to your own life mastery and to live in a more expanded consciousness with your tribes of light. To learn more, visit mywildmagic.com. That is mywildmagic.com.
Tune in to the Be Happy Now show with me, Claudia Sam. Flex your soul connection muscle and be your inner guide to fulfillment. Every Thursday on TransformationTalkRadio.com, you are here for a bigger reason and are worthy of accessing it. Experience happiness now. Tune in to your intuition and connect with me. Visit ClaudiaSamCoaching.com.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Awaken Your Truth with me, Ritika Rose, where I bring conscious dialogues that free your mind, heal your life, and embody your power. Today's episode is with my special colleague, Taylor Mefford, who is a mental health counselor, and we're talking about facilitating supportive connection within the LGBTQ community. And as we come back into this next segment, we're going to talk about what makes for a good community, what makes for a good LGBTQ community. And an important message that Taylor wants to share about how do we support those that are closeted during Pride Month. So Taylor, let's jump into that real quick. You know, like when we were talking before the show, before our show today, our meeting, you know, I actually asked, you know, hey Taylor, like for those that are still closeted, how would I support someone who's still closeted? How would I know that they're closeted? Right. So I do want you to talk about that, because I think that that's really super important. Right. Because we do want to make sure, or at least those of us that want to make sure we're supporting everybody, we do want to support everybody, right? But how do we support someone that is still closeted? And how would a closeted person feel like going through the curiosity, permission, and courage process, right? Like, how can we support them in today's conversation about giving themselves permission and the courage to sort of maybe show up, even if they still want to be closeted, but how can they still show up, right? And celebrate themselves during Pride Month. And then in turn, you know, building a better supportive connected community. So I'm going to go ahead and have you speak on that a little bit, and I'll jump in if I need to, if I have any questions that come up.
Yeah, absolutely. So to preface kind of my position on this, I was raised in a conservative religious community that was not very accepting or affirming of LGBTQ folks. And so, you know, I am coming at this from the perspective of somebody who was closeted for a long time and whose friends were largely closeted. And so I think about being closeted, I think a little bit differently than a lot of people did, at least when I was growing up. When I was growing up, it seemed that the general broader advice was that if you want to live the happiest, fullest life, that you should come out, that you cannot be fully happy and healthy without being out and proud. That didn't really match my experience and didn't match the experience of a lot of the people around me. We were finding that to come out was actually more dangerous and was more likely to cause an impact to our health and well-being. And
that
so
comes back to your safety conversation.
Absolutely.
Feeling safe. Absolutely. Yeah.
We're not going to have a full community with LGBTQ folks included if they aren't safe enough to be who they are.
Right.
And so the question then becomes, if we have these parts of society where people are not wanting to come out for whatever reason, whether it's because of safety or because they just simply don't feel the need, how do we then include them, especially during a time like Pride Month? For a long time, Pride Month was a really painful time for me because I saw all of these people around me who were allowing themselves to celebrate who they are, and they were having these gatherings that I felt like I couldn't show up to because what if somebody saw me there? Could I lose my job? Could I lose my housing? Could I even lose my life?
That's an interesting point. Thank you for sharing that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so I had to start thinking about, okay, how then do I celebrate this? And how do I help other people around me celebrate? So I'm not really on social media anymore. I don't quite have the time for it. But back when I was more active on social media, I made a regular practice every year, really actually once or twice throughout Pride Month, I would make a social media post pointing this out and just saying, hey, while all of you are having your parades and your parties, enjoy them, but also recognize that there are a lot of people who can't be there. Mm-hmm. And this was a way of signaling both to people within the community and outside the community that there are those people who are in the closet and who are wrestling with what spaces they can take part in and what spaces they can't. And it was also a way of giving permission to those people who were in the closet to say, hey, however you need to spend Pride Month, that's okay. Mm-hmm. If you need someone to talk to, I'm here. If you want to just do it by yourself, that's okay too. Here are a few ideas for how you can celebrate on your own. It was really important to me that we make room for that segment of the population.
Right. Thank you for sharing that. I think, you know, what I'd love to see through these conversations, right? And there's a reason why the show is called Awaken Your Truth, because I really want people to awaken the truth to all these really important topics so we can start shifting our perspective in how we view the world and view other people so we can create a more accepting, loving, compassionate world, right? Mm-hmm. And thank you for sharing your very personal story about, you know, if I show up during Pride Month to an event, am I going to lose my job? Am I going to lose my housing? How is that going to affect me? What I'd love to see personally, right, as people are hearing this conversation, and as we talk about it more and people see more posts and things like that, is if we see it, like it should, now going forward during the Pride events or any other events that come up to support the LGBTQIA communities, if we see anybody out there, right, let's let's step into the curiosity, permission, courage phase that Taylor talks about, right? And ask permission. Is it okay? I think asking permission too is, I think, a really important thing as far as asking someone a question and being curious, right? Maybe someone's not ready to share yet, right? So let me know if you're okay with me saying this, but like asking permission to ask a question, right? To be curious, right? Is it okay if I ask you XYZ question, right? About curiosity of someone being there or how they're identifying or what have you. And then having the courage then to be yourself, and then having the courage to also accept the other human being for who they are, right? Going forward, that's what I'd love to see out of this conversation when people are hearing, I mean, as people share this conversation, right? Like, let's understand that, yes, there are so, thank you, Taylor. There are so many people that are still closeted and are struggling with how do they come out with their identity or the identity that they prefer to show up as, right? Or even just saying, I'm questioning my identity and I don't know, right? I know two people right now I can personally think of in my life, right? Friends and colleagues that I know are questioning their identity, mm-hmm. right? And they're really struggling with it. And they're very open about it on social media, right? Mm-hmm. Which is great because they are giving themselves permission to share. But, and those that they feel comfortable with and safe with, they share that with, right? Which I think is also huge. So, you know, so thank you for sharing that. At least that's what I like to see come out of this conversation and this segment, right? And so, you know, let's sort of go into now. So I think that your three steps, the process of curiosity, permission, and courage is really what helps to build a good community, right? But you also talk about, let's take a look at what's broken.
Right.
Right. And so can you give us examples of what you think is broken and how can we start to mend that if it's possible? Yeah, I think it is possible, but.
Absolutely. And I think that is largely dependent on the specific culture of the community that you reside in. What exactly is broken? You know, what is broken here in New York City is going to be very different than what is broken in rural Nebraska,
right?
For example.
Right.
But to think of this, I think maybe on a more national scale, I don't know where your viewership or your listenership mm-hmm. is coming from, but, you know, right now we are having a lot of conversations about trans people and their place in society. What are the protections that we are allowing them? And what are the protections that are being challenged? There's a lot of conversations about trans education in schools or trans participation in sports. And speaking for myself, I am really concerned about the trajectory that those are taking. Those conversations are taking. We're not asking ourselves, what's going on here? You know, what are the assumptions that we're having about trans people, about their place in society? What maybe are the flaws there? How are the trans people feeling about this? Are they feeling accepted? Are they feeling okay with the trajectory things are on? And we're kind of having this conversation without them. And so for me, I think that part of building this larger community involves going to the people who are being rejected and asking them, what do you need from us? You know, that is allyship 101.
Right.
It's just going to the affected person and saying, what do you need from us right now?
Right.
What are the changes you would like to see? How do you think those changes could come about? And, you know, if you have a strong feeling about standing up for your trans friends or family members or colleagues, ask them what they need and then go to bat for them.
Thank you. And let's also make it a safe place when we start having these conversations and we start asking them. We need to ensure that when these conversations are happening and we are looking to fix or mend things in society, that the people that we're asking to show up within this community feel safe to be there.
Absolutely.
Right.
And how can they feel safe if we're operating from the assumption that we know best?
Right. And I think that this is exactly back to your point. Let's, as a society, as much as we can, get rid of assumption, right? And open up our curiosity, right? Give yourself permission to be curious. Give yourself permission and courage to be curious, right? And ask your family, your friends, your colleagues, right? How are you feeling? How can I support you? And how can I make this a safe conversation for you? How can I make this a safe environment for you to show up?
Yeah.
How you want to be and in the identity that you feel most comfortable in.
Yeah. And that includes, I think, being also willing to accept an answer of, no, I'm good. Please give me some space to process this on my own or to mourn on my own.
Absolutely. Yep. And not pushing a conversation or pushing someone to talk about something when they don't feel like they're ready to, which I think is a great segue into our next segment after we come back from commercial break, is your talking point on queer grief. Mm-hmm. Right. And so thank you, everybody, for listening. When we come back, Taylor's going to share with us queer grief. And if you could maybe at the top of the segment, just sort of explain your definition of what queer means, and then the queer grief process, and the unique features of grief in the queer community. Right?
Sounds great.
All right. Thank you, everybody, for listening, and we'll be right back.
Hi, I'm Bonnie Minku, ADHD coach. People with ADHD can be vastly different from each other, but one thing most ADHD adults have in common is a poor time sense, an unrealistic idea of how long things take to do. With a really poor time sense, what you probably expect to get done in a day, only Superman could accomplish. Yet, after barely getting through a fraction of your to-dos, you end each day feeling inadequate and ashamed that you didn't finish it all. The problem lies in your magical thinking about time. To get real, compare how long you think something will take you to do with the reality. For at least 7 tasks, write down how many times longer each one really took than what you had guessed. Then use that information to plan. Learn more about time sense and other strategies in my podcast, ADHD Self-Mastery, Customized Solutions for Your Unique Brain.
Join the new earth on the Cornelia Stephanie Show. Tune in each month as Cornelia takes listeners on an odyssey of higher consciousness to inspire, educate, and empower. Cornelia Stephanie is a spiritual teacher, passionate speaker, published author, and founder of the Empower Network. Cornelia guides people on the path of self-healing, peace, and liberation. For more information, go to corneliastephanie.com.
What could you achieve if you knew someone was going to ask about your progress every week? Accountability matters. Small corrections and check-ins with your goals can lead to big results in your business without you feeling overwhelmed. Success Magnified owner Mary Gall provides entrepreneurs a system of goal setting and accountability to create clarity about where you are now, your future direction, and the most effective way to get there. Book your free call at successmagnified.com today.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to Awaken Your Truth with me, Ritika Rose, and my special guest, Taylor Mefford, as we're talking about how to build a more supportive and connected LGBTQIA community. As we come into this last segment, Taylor's going to share with us his personal story of queer identity, the intersection of religiosity and then queer grief, and really what launched him into his career today. And there's so much around this. So I'm just going to let Taylor start talking, and I'm going to just jump in as I need to with points as I feel like they need to come up. But I think it's so important, and it was so interesting to me, Taylor, when you brought up this point about the intersection of religiosity and queer identity and what that looks like, right, for someone that identifies as queer, and what that means for their religious practices or beliefs, right? I think this is such an important talking point and a very interesting talking point today as we're opening up our society a little bit more. So yes, please do share your personal experience around that. And I know that that was sort of the beginning of your process, and then sort of the grief process, and then what launched you into your career of sort of helping your clientele with both processes, right? Absolutely. Yeah, thank you.
Yeah, so when I started school in my undergraduate years, I was on a path to become the quintessential Renaissance man. I wanted to do music. I wanted to do poetry. I wanted to be a chef. I wanted to do it all. And kind of the side gig that I had was working with homeless youth, many of whom were from the LGBT community in my area. What we were finding was that a lot of the young people who were living homeless in my area were from families who had said, hey, you're gay, you're trans, we can't have that in our household, we need to have you leave. And they had nowhere else to go because all of their family members were from the same religious tradition. And so they were living on the streets. Around that time, I was dealing with kind of my own similar struggle, coming from the same religious background, coming from my own challenging family situation, and starting to wrestle with my queer identity. I'm fortunate in that my family was a little bit more accepting than most. When I came out to them, it was a more or less safe conversation. I still talk to my folks.
Could you real quick, Taylor, just explain to the audience when someone says queer identity, if we can just help them understand what that means for those that don't understand it yet?
Yeah, absolutely. So I use the term queer in this case as an umbrella term rather than throwing out the whole acronym, you know, LGBTQIA+. It's a lot easier for me to just shorthand it and say queer. Okay. It's a way of explaining the variability. Queerness is all about difference, but also thinking of things in a more expansive way. And so there's a lot of subtext to the word that I really enjoy. And so I use it to describe myself. I use it to describe the community. And that's the term that I'm most comfortable with. Not everybody uses that term, especially if they're from an older generation where the term queer was more offensive and was a word used as a signifier of violence. But today we've started to reclaim that word, and I do what I can to use it in my daily practice.
Thank you for sharing that. That's a super important point and so true. Okay. Yeah. Go ahead.
Happy to clarify that. So coughing break number two.
It's okay.
Okay. There we go. Where was I? Right. So working with homeless youth, I was going through that same struggle myself. My family was more or less accepting, but there was still this problem on my hands. How do I reconcile the fact that I believe in a God who believes that I should go to hell for being queer, but also live in a way that felt comfortable to me and felt authentic to who I am in all of my parts? And that really launched me into a big question of, you know, not only how do I do this, but how do other people do this? And so I started to shift my career away from all of the art stuff that I still enjoy doing, but don't do to make money anymore. Not that I was making money anyway. And into really asking this question and exploring this question of how are people pulling this off? And for several years, that was my mission in life, was to answer that question. How do people reconcile their identities? And I was doing a lot of research. I was starting to involve this question into my clinical practice as I started to become a practicing therapist. And we still don't quite know, but we have a clearer sense of what's going on. And one way to think about it is what I like to call the box model. So you have, you can imagine somebody walking down a road and they're carrying two, we'll say, cardboard boxes. And one of them is labeled sexuality and gender, and the other one is labeled religion. And for most people, both of those boxes are really heavy, regardless of their identity, regardless of whether they identify as religious or whether or not they identify as queer. And so we have these people who are carrying both boxes, trying to make sense of it and trying to carry them without dropping them. At least that's how they start out. They're trying to carry both. They're carrying one in each arm, keeping them separate. That's kind of the image that comes to mind for me. They're trying to do what they can to keep them separate. But if you've ever tried to carry a box under each arm, that's really challenging. That's really going to work your muscles. And so you try to shift it around a bit.
Yeah.
You try to figure out, okay, how do I, can I stack the boxes on top of each other? Can I fit one inside of the other? Can I even leave one behind? Can I set one down, carry this one for a little bit, and then maybe come back for the other one? And we find that people are doing all of these things to try to navigate their identities. They may try to continue carrying them separately. I'm going to have two separate parts to my life. I'm going to have this queer side and this religious side. Or they try to fit one inside the other. They may try to say, okay, I'm going to try to figure out how my queerness fits into my religious experience, or figure out how my religious experience can be more queer. But then there are those people who also say, you know what? I actually can't carry both. These boxes don't fit together and my arms are tired. And so I need to set one down. Some people choose to set down that religion box and they leave organized religion entirely. Or they set down their queer box and they say, I'm not going to explore that part of myself right now. I'm just going to carry my religion box and I'm going to stay in the closet. I'm not going to explore the queer side of myself. And that then begs the question then, what is the most healthy way? And that's kind of where I started getting stuck in my questioning was, okay, then what is the best way? And I was digging into that and was trying to figure out, okay, well, can people fit the boxes together in a certain way? Is leaving behind one box healthiest? And there isn't really a straightforward answer. It's different for everybody. As I was starting to explore that idea of what is healthiest, there's a flip side to that question of, well, then what's the most damaging? And then in asking that question, I started to be exposed to a lot of really painful stories. People who were trying to reconcile, trying to fit these boxes together, trying to leave one box behind in a way that was not working for them. And it was leading to higher rates of suicide. And that was something that was and is still really difficult for me to wrap my mind around and to sit with. The fact that I know that there are these people who are wrestling with this pain and nobody is making it any easier for them. Nobody is making it easier to reconcile. And the only way that they can find out is to drop both boxes. And that brought me to my present interest in this professional world, which is queer grief. What does queerness teach about grief? And what does the grieving process teach us about queerness? And what is unique about the way that queer people experience grief? So I write about and talk a lot about what is known as disenfranchised grief.
Okay.
The idea behind disenfranchised grief is that for most people, grief isn't really accepted. We don't have a whole lot of space in Western society for grieving. If somebody's sad, we say, you know what, keep that over there. We don't want to see it. We even set up our urban planning is set up in this way. We keep the cemeteries on the edge of town, the way that we build hospitals, we keep the terminally ill patients along a long hallway away from everybody else where it's hard to get to them. It's because we don't want to be exposed to dying and we don't want to be exposed to grieving. But if somebody dies and somebody's grieving, we say, okay, I don't want to see your grief, but it's okay that you're grieving. You lost your husband, you lost your child. Right. We understand why you're grieving. For queer people, many of them don't even get that. They lose a partner, they lose a queer child, they, you know, they may even be grieving a part of their identity, losing a part of themselves, mm-hmm. or losing a part of their community. And broader society looks at that and they say, well, that sucks because you shouldn't even have had that to begin with. Doesn't matter that you've lost that. That's actually probably a good thing that you
lost. It's like the point that, you know, you and I were discussing before recording the show is that grieving something society is saying you should not grieve, which is being queer.
Exactly. Yeah. And what does that do to a person? And that's the question that I'm starting to explore now. What does that look like? And how can we support those people who don't even have a space to love the thing that they've lost?
Right.
And I wish I had lots of answers for you. I'm still learning.
Yeah. No, but I think what's important for the audience that's listening is, because another point, you know, that you and I've talked about is that, you know, the private grieving process, right? Because back to the point of, you know, what you and I've talked about before this show is, you know, grieving something society is saying you shouldn't be grieving. But then what happens is the queer individual is grieving privately. They don't have anyone to talk to. Or they don't feel like they can talk to anybody because no one's going to understand what they're going through. Then all the processes that you've talked about start to happen, right?
Exactly.
And that's the most harmful thing that we can do to ourselves and to society, right? Is not allowing someone to grieve and not allowing them to talk to someone or allowing ourselves to actively listen to someone when they need a supportive ear, right? Right. And even if it's not us individually, but then again, back to your curiosity, permission, courage, right? If they just felt safe enough to say, hey, I'm going through this, any friend or colleague or family member could say, you know, I'm not the right one to talk to, maybe, mm-hmm. but go out and seek support from someone like Taylor, right? Go out and find a mental health counselor that can support you with this process, right? Because there are people that can and want to help you through this process, and you're not alone.
Exactly. Exactly. You know, there are people like me who are trained in understanding the grieving process and understanding those nuances. You know, people who can understand that you may not have space in your broader life for the grief or for the love that undergirds that grief. And we want to make space for that.
Mm-hmm.
We want to allow you to, at least for 45 minutes a week, coughing break number three.
That's okay.
We want to make space for you to have that playground. I like to think of it as a playground or a sandbox to really explore what is that love,
mm-hmm.
and what is it like to have that loss in your life. And what is it like to not have space for it outside? And how can we turn that grief into something that makes you stronger? All sorts of questions.
One thing we talked about too is what can queerness teach us about the grieving process? A different viewpoint on grief. So you have talking points on the anti-structure of grief versus the five stages of grief. Now, most people who've studied psychology or work in psychology, you know, understand the five stages of grief, right? Common thing taught, heard of, but you have a talking point about the anti-structure of grief, which is maybe different for the queer community. Do you, could you talk on that a little bit?
Absolutely. So
and maybe helping, and I think my idea of this talking point is for those that are listening into the show who are maybe questioning their identity or really don't know how to grieve. Maybe they just don't know how to grieve. Maybe they don't even know that they're in a grieving process.
Yeah.
Right. I want you to talk on that a little bit to help people understand, okay, maybe you are grieving and maybe this is time for you to seek out support and know that someone like myself, meaning you, Taylor, is here to support you. Right.
Absolutely. you know, and I'm going to pitch the radical idea that we're all grieving. We all have things that we've lost.
I agree.
And that, I think, is the biggest point into this idea of what queerness can teach us about grief, is that we all have a relationship with our gender, our sexuality, and with grief. This is something that is more universal than I think most people seem to realize. It's not really a like us versus them, or there's me and there's you. We're all in this together. We are all exploring our grief together, grieving different things, certainly, but we're all in that process. But what is that process? I think is another part of the question. Most people are probably familiar with the five stages of grief, which, as a little bit of an educational point, was not actually designed for grieving people. It was designed for the dying. Those five stages were created to describe how people who are about to die are thinking about their own mortality, going through that denial, that anger, that bargaining, and so on. So already with that, we know that the five stages are not really designed to describe people who are grieving the loss of their dead loved one. Mm-hmm. But then, okay, then, so that five stages don't work. What does? What is the right way to think about it? And the right way to think about it is anything goes. There are all sorts of ways that we can grieve. There are public forms of grief, private forms of grief. There are loud forms of grief, quiet forms of grief. And all of them are valid. Just as all forms of expressing our sexuality or gender are valid, as long as it's not hurting somebody, as long as we're not going out and beating somebody up in an expression of our grief.
Right.
It's okay. Whatever you're feeling is valid.
I would say then, and correct me if I'm wrong, Taylor, so for this particular conversation about questioning your identity, right? Mm-hmm. And I would say then to the audience, if anyone's listening or you know, or people that are listening, you know anyone that maybe is going through this, right? If a grieving example could be like any, really, if you're feeling a loss of anything within yourself, right? Mm-hmm. Right? If you feel like you're losing something about yourself, whether it's your identity or anything that comes around changing your identity or identifying in a different way or what have you, any loss you feel like you may be incurring could be the beginning of a grieving process, right or wrong?
Absolutely.
Yeah. And if that is coming, because we just have about a minute here left. So if that is coming up for anybody, please consider, you know, receiving support for someone from someone you feel safe with, whether that's in your personal circles or someone like Taylor or any other, you know, mental health counselors and therapists that are out there that specialize in the queer community, specialize in queer identity, or if you don't like the word queer, the LGBTQIA plus communities. There are many therapists and counselors that are out there to support you. Any last thoughts, Taylor?
Absolutely. Speaking to that point of, you know, seeking out a mental health professional, you know, my website will be included in all of the promotional materials for this podcast episode. Mm-hmm. Feel free to reach out to me if you need help finding a mental health counselor or another mental health professional to help guide you through this process. I'm well connected. I know a lot of people who are trained to help you through any sort of grieving process, whether that is grieving the loss of a loved one or grieving losing a part of yourself. There are people out there who are ready to help you, and I want to help you find them.
Excellent. Thank you so much, Taylor, for being on my show today and for sharing your insights. And just for everybody that's listening, and I'm sure Taylor will agree with this, you have been created uniquely and especially just who you are. You are perfect just the way you are and with whatever identity that feels comfortable to you. So know that there is nothing wrong with you. There are many of us that are out here that see you, that love you, that support you. And reach out if you do feel like you need any support in any way. The website is under Taylor's video here. And thank you so much for listening. Happy Pride Month, everybody. Go out and support your loved ones through the rest of this month. And thank you so much for listening. And we'll be back in July. Thank you, Taylor. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to Awaken Your Truth with me, Ritika Rose. I hope that you heard something today that sparked a shift in your perspective to free your mind, heal your life, and embody your power. The world needs love, acceptance, togetherness, and belonging. My hope is to be a contributing force towards the new world we need to create together. If each of us can awaken our truth and live with more empathy and authenticity, that shift will radiate. Spread the word and tune in next time for more conscious dialogues of healing and transformation on Transformation Talk Radio and Awaken Your Truth with Ritika Rose on YouTube and across all podcast stations. For more information about how to work with me, please visit RitikaRose.com.